Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
And welcome to Money Matters, your economic forum. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Today's edition 271, into summer we go, 2018. Before we begin, please be advised discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only or the opinions of the guests that I may have on the show. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. So on the show, we talk about investing, but we have a non-money portion of the show called Investing in Community. And with that, we talk about nonprofits and events and even politicians and elections. And we also have a video series called Investing Community that we put out to KVMR and other media outlets. And so, Investing Community. And today we are Investing in Community. And we have guests in the house. Sue Knappen of the Hospitality House. Sue, I want to welcome you to the show today.
Hey, thanks so much for having us, Mark. We appreciate KVMR and all that you folks here do for our organization.
Well, thank you. I've been over there more than a few times. And so I know there's multifacets to the Hospitality House. So briefly explain all the entities that the Hospitality House has and what you do.
Yeah, well, Hospitality House provides shelter, 365 nights a year. We have 54 beds and, clothing, showers, toiletries, all that comes with a deal. Laundry, come on in, get cleaned up, get some items that you may need, all that kind of stuff every night. Food, of course. We have some wonderful dinner groups that come in and prepare supply and prepare the food.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, have you done that?
Yes,
yeah.
I have, with my kids. I actually dragged my kids down.
Awesome.
There. Now, we're talking specifically Nevada County, but the show is carried over about 65 stations all over the United States. So
Okay. This
is applicable probably to many of the, I wouldn't call it a food pantry. I would call it a assistance shelter. Is that kind of the right thing to call it?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I am not the one to really put the correct words on that. I can just tell you what we do provide.
You feed and shelter.
We have case managers as well.
Right.
They help the folks, overcome the barriers that they're finding to getting back into housing.
Right.
We have a housing case manager.
Right.
She helps the folks, find affordable housing and get them the right paperwork that they need and all that kind of stuff.
So I understand that in this particular county, you are the only shelter?
That is correct.
The only shelter in the whole county?
The only emergency homeless shelter.
Now, if you're listening to this in another county, in another state, they too, you're not national, of course, but they too have their own shelters and food pantries and such. So as a general sense, what we're putting out today is the ability or the conduit to help those that are less fortunate than us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the entities that you have are, talk about Utah's Place and the thrift shop.
Yeah, absolutely. So Utah's Place is the name of our building in honor of Utah Phillips, and that is where all this good stuff happens that we've been talking about, and that is located 1262 Sutton Way. If anybody needs to find us,
that's in Grass Valley.
Yep, I'm sorry, in Grass Valley. That's where we are. Come on in. We give tours. If anybody is just interested, wants to see how the facility works, we were happy to do that. as well as if you, you know somebody that needs our services, bring them on out. So that is where that's located. And then Bread and Roses is our thrift shop that is located 840 East Main in Grass Valley, right next to Sierra Cinema. And thank you, Mark, for doing that spot you did there a couple weeks ago.
You're welcome. Great show.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, well, Audrey and I had a great time. It was a great show.
That's good. It's a great store.
It is a great store.
We have it set up, if I may say so. Yeah, we have it set up kind of boutique style. And we think it looks real nice and it's clean. It's neat. It smells good. Not at all like, you know, you might find some thrift stores. Everybody has their own flavor.
And it's a nonprofit. Let's get that clear.
Yes,
okay, absolutely.
All proceeds. Come directly back to the shelter.
Okay. And now I understand that people will come in and donate. Well, I saw lots of shoes to make Imelda Marcus jealous.
Yeah.
Audrey was checking out some purses. You had furniture. You had appliances over there.
Right.
So you get that. But then some of the patrons of the hospitality house can come over with vouchers and just get stuff?
Yes, that's correct. They can, as well as not just the guests, but those in need in the community. If they stop in at the shelter, they can have a voucher written for them, and they get to discuss with the caseworker, you know, what's up, what do you need, what's happening, and then they come on over, and we help them find what they need. Maybe it's for an interview, maybe they're just really down and out and have worn through their shoes.
Sure.
So they look around, and we just give that to them, you know, get them what they need. So sometimes people will donate things to the shelter, and we do keep some supplies there as well, and they'll look through it and see what kind of things they need. Some of the donations are really better utilized at the store. You know, a really nice blouse, somebody isn't really going to want that for their everyday wear. So we send that to the store, and if it sells, great. We've made some money to send back to the shelter, or if it's on the shelf when somebody comes for an interview, shirt, you know, then it's there too. So,
okay.
So it kind of all takes all forms. So we just want the folks out there to know all donations are being used to the best of, you know, the ability. And then the folks can come over for free and get what they need.
Okay. And how many beds do you have there?
At the shelter?
Yeah.
54.
54. Yeah, what do you do when there's 55 people or 60 people?
Well, in the winter, we did have an overflow system. We worked with the city to get that approved and funded. And there was 15 extra beds.
Oh, that's great.
Unfortunately, sometimes there are extra people that we do just have to turn away. And that isn't my area as the volunteer coordinator of expertise. But from what I understand, it's a difficult process to, you know, evaluate which folks are in need and, you know, which ones have to be turned away. But,
and when you have a guest, is there a limit on how long they can stay?
To my understanding, not at the moment. It is sort of based on making progress. You know, like, hey, let's help these people move through and let's set up a case plan. And sometimes that may take longer than others. So that is what we're working with right now. Yeah, there may be a better answer for that out there from one of the
caseworkers. And you might have overnight 54. Is the house full every night?
Yeah, it has been.
It has been. Okay, so do you only serve the 54 people staying food? Or can you serve more than 54 guests as far as food is concerned?
Yeah, generally they do prepare for more than that. Sometimes, you know, the volunteers may sit down and take a meal with the guests as part of their, you know, volunteering. And I believe as they are evaluating who's to stay and who's not, I think some of those folks get fed as well, even though they may get, you know, asked to exit for the evening.
Yeah, one of the touching scenes I had was that my son, Dominic, was over there. Oh, I know, a couple years ago. And he ended up playing chess with somebody after dinner. And it was amazing to see those two, you know, from so different age groups and different dynamics.
Yeah, that is. That's wonderful. And we love that kind of interaction.
Yeah.
And to have those volunteers, that is very useful. We consider that, just to be, like I said, useful and helpful. And
yeah, this is Mark Cuniberti. We're talking with Sue Knappen of our local hospitality house, our shelter and food pantry, I guess you could say. I'm sure that you, if you're listening to this in another area, you have your own companion type of facilities that are out there. So you have an event coming up So tell us about, you always have events coming up.
So we have a little fashion show going on. That's coming up at Atria, one of our senior living facilities here in Grass Valley. And the clothing will be coming from the thrift store. So that'll show you what kind of, you know, great stuff we have. And you can give Debbie a call if you want to come to that. 615-0852.
Okay, say, hold on. We'll copy that down just a second. 615-0852. Who are you going to use for the models to model the clothing? What are you doing with that?
That, I believe...
You're looking for volunteer models? I'm not going to do it, but I know a couple of, of women that appear on film for me that might want to do that. What are you doing with that?
This is Debbie's gig. I'm not 100% sure. I think some of the models are coming from within Atria itself, but I believe they're also pulling from the community.
Do I have 80, 90-year-old models?
Would that be fabulous or what? I think that would be a blast.
No.
Well, we'll have to see how that
depending on what they model.
Mark.
All right.
So you'll have to give Debbie a call for more specifics.
Okay. Again, we've been speaking with Sue Knappen of our local hospitality house held in Utah's place. Utah Phillips used to be a broadcaster here, syndicated many, many different stations over the U.S. and passed away, oh, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, somewhere there.
Yep, 10 this year.
Was it 10? Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so... is there anything else that you would like to tell our listeners before I let you go?
Well, sure. You know, speaking of investing, and you said investing in your community, that mm-hmm. just got me thinking about investing your time as a volunteer, because that's mm-hmm. my role. I have to say that, right? So what we're looking for right now is teams of 4 to 6, say, folks that might want to volunteer on Mondays at the thrift store. So the plan is...
Oh, okay, thrift store employees.
Yeah,
okay.
We're currently closed on Mondays, so mm-hmm. we think it would be great if we could have a team of volunteer-only folks that would run the thrift store from noon to 4, so it's only 4 hours. We'd be open just a short little window. Mm-hmm. We'd make some money that was kind of, you know, pure profit without having
employees. I picked up 4
employees.
To 6 p.m. Was I wrong? It's 12 to 4?
12 to 4 would be the hours. The thrift store is normally open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 6. But this little Monday project we have going, we're thinking noon to 4 would be a good time slot. So if any of you want to gather together with your friends out there, we think that would be a blast to grab 3, 4, 5 friends mm-hmm. and come on over and work in the afternoon. We would fully train you and make sure you had all the support you needed. And then you could run the thrift shop for an afternoon and help us make some money.
Well, that's fun. I hope we can find some warm bodies for that. That number for that is 530-615-0805.
05. 08, not 52? No. I mean, you could call 52.
We got to stick with one or the other. Going to get confused. So
okay,
let's just stick with 530-615-0852.
Perfect.
530-615-0852. Do you have a website?
We do. We have, you know, www.hhshelter.org.
Dutch HH Shelter. Mm-hmm. .org, www.hhshelter.org. Do you know if there's a contact form in there in case somebody didn't want to call?
Yes,
absolutely. Just bang and do it that way.
Yes, there is.
All right. Well, Sue, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I want to thank you for all the tremendous service that you do over there. I've seen it firsthand. We've profiled it. We detailed it. I think it's just an amazing, amazing thing you do.
Well, thanks again for having us, Mark.
We'll be right back to talk a little bit more about money. And a big thanks goes out to Sue Lappin of Hospitality House. Thank you, Sue. Sue Knappen, what a great service they provide for sure. And so we have to go on to the markets, right? That's what we're here for, is covering the markets. But we do cover in the investing in community, and that's extremely important for us and for you out there. But we also like to also cover the community, of course. And so... we start out with, where's the Dow? The Dow's at 25,225. And we're always talking about these big numbers of support and resistance. support being now in the 25,000 and over, its support would be 25,000, so 25,225. The large number below it, which would be 25,000, the even number, would be what we call a support level. So now that it's blown through the, from the 24,000s into the 25,000s, now we can say that the number 25,000 below is what we call a support level, and that is what some technicians will look at and say, okay, now it's going to be a little, might be a little tougher to get below 25,000 again. Sort of like these little floors and these little ceilings. With 25,225, now this, the resistance level would be, there are many minor resistance levels that, that fall in with the technical analysts look at, but the 26,000 level above us would be what we call resistance level. So there are other numbers, but the large ones are generally regarded as more important, or can be more important to for people that look at these things. Now, I will say with a caveat, a warning, that you never know what the market's going to do. Nobody can tell you what the market's going to do, but there is a group of people, technical analysts, that look at these things and say, okay, we're at 25,225, wherever we are, and 25,000 below is a support level, and 26,000 is above. Now, we, the highest we've had in the Dow is 26,616, if my memory serves me right. So we haven't hit a new high yet. The low, of course, would be zero when the Dow started. And when Trump took office, it was 17,000 and some change. So it's scooted up a good, you know, almost 8,000 points since Trump took office. Why has it done that? Well, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I have some educated guesses, but there was a majority of people, or a lot of people, thought when Trump got elected, the market would crater. And the anti-market stuff like gold and oil and some of the other things would skyrocket. Fixed income would skyrocket. And what happened is the night that it looked like he was going to win, then the futures, which are indicators of what may happen the next day, I was looking at them because I couldn't really believe that Trump had won. The futures said that the market was going to be down close to 1,000 points and gold was going to be up $100. And I went, yeah, there you go. And I woke up at 4 in the morning and I looked at the screen, and indeed, it had completely reversed. Apparently, the traders, investors, corporations, and all the people that are involved in these markets thought that Trump was going to do good for the market. It was going to be a good thing. And from 17,000 to 25, I don't know what's that. That's almost not quite a double. But not a double, a 50% increase, whatever that is. Divide 17,200 by 25,200, and whatever that percentage is the percentage of increase. So apparently those people that traded that market that morning thinking the Dow would go up were right. And so there you go. It's interesting today, the Nasdaq is down 50 with the Dow up 100. So it must have been going on with some stocks in the Nasdaq. Now, what does that mean? What's the Dow 30? What's the Nasdaq? What's the Russell 2000? What's the S&P 500? Those are different markets. So if you want to buy a vegetable, you go to a vegetable market. You want to buy meat, you go to a butcher. You want to buy clothes, you go to a clothing store. So the Dow 30 has only 30 stocks in it. So there's only 30 stocks that the Dow is looking at. And the Nasdaq has a lot of the smaller type stocks, maybe a lot of electronics in there. Tech stocks, Russell 2000, wide group of stocks in there. So some stock in the tech sector or one of those in the NASDAQ is probably down hard today, which has dragged the NASDAQ down uncharacteristically, not in concert with the Dow. And so don't know which that is. I haven't looked, and I don't have time to look as we're on the air. So we'll see. Okay, you know what's interesting is we have seen consumer staples. I've commented on this before. From Zacks, which is a newswire, Zacks. It says Smucker's, the jam people, down 8% on quarter four earnings in the sales miss. Smucker's. And we've seen that in some of the consumer staples. That it might be stocks like Clorox or Procter & Gamble or Kraft Heinz or some of those. They have kind of been brutalized in the last, 6-8 months, if my memory serves me right. And today, retail sector, has really been hammered hard. the skinny on why the retail sector has been hammered hard is the juggernaut Amazon. Some are attributing it to that Amazon is pretty much going to destroy every other store on the planet. You know, what's the odds of that, really? But today, the news item comes out. You know, poor beleaguered Sears. This is not a comment or recommendation to buy or sell Sears. But it says Sears is closing 68 stores as sales tumble. 68 stores. It's closing five more announced today on top of the 63 that it was closing. And there's a list on where they're closing the stores. But that's available. I found that on finance.yahoo.com. And that story is put out on finance.yahoo.com by Zacks. It's dated June 6, 2018. Sears is closing 68 stores as sales tumble. Here's the full list. And that was the title of the article. So speaking of market movements, how does an investor preserve gains that they have made when markets fall, right? You don't want to ride it all up and then in turn ride it all the way down. So knowing how to deal with market falls, right, is as important as knowing how to deal with market rallies. Anybody knows how to deal with a market rally. You hold on and go for a ride, hopefully a good ride. Since we are all in the markets to make more than we originally had, keeping gains when you have them as markets fall is akin to making sure you don't just give it back when Mr. Market throws a hissy fit. Since one never knows when the market will fall, by how much, and when it will stop, having a strategy of some sorts is a prudent idea. You have a strategy. What do I do when the market will fall? There are many strategies, and most, but not all, involve selling out, either partially or entirely, when your, quote, trigger points are hit. Okay. What's a trigger point? Well, a trigger point is a mental milestone where you have agreed with yourself or have promised your significant other that you will get out in some way or another, or partially get out, and adopt a stance or a position that may not get hit so hard or maybe even gain when the markets fall. So you're saying, the market's going to fall. If I lose a certain amount of money or whatever it is, then I'm going to take some money off the table or either bet in the opposite direction. And you can bet either way. But if you bet, you can bet when markets fall that you can buy assets that are geared to rise when markets fall. Okay? Call it bear funds, or some people call them hedging, various names of it, but you can place money in assets that traditionally would go opposite of the market direction. I mean, one strategy might be percentage points. So you could agree that if you have gains, when you lose half your gains, you say, or whatever you decide, you can just sell out your account entirely. That would be one strategy of hundreds that you could adopt. If I made $48,000, when I give half of it back, I'm out. I'm going to sell it all. That's a simple strategy anyone can implement, although it may not be the best strategy. Let's say you started with 100 grand and it gains 20 grand, making your portfolio worth 120 grand. If it falls to 110 grand, you've lost half your profit, you sell out. You could also tie the trigger to an index such as a Dow or a NASDAQ or whatever. Remember, you can't invest directly in an index. You can only buy proxy types of investments. So you could try the trigger to an index such as the Dow or NASDAQ. The percentages could say, if the NASDAQ falls 10%, I'm out. Or if the Dow falls 10%, or you can make a combination of any of those if you wanted to. An infinite number of combinations. The key is, whatever method you decide on, the reason you are doing it is to retain at least some of the gains you have made. I'm going to keep some of the profit I have made. I don't want to give it all back. Prudent, in my opinion, prudent. I don't care how much, I don't know how many people I've known during the dot-com fiasco. Literally, I mean, I had guys that had 50 grand, made millions, and gave it all back. They just held on. Another method could partially be selling out some stocks. Partially, instead of a complete sellout. So you could say, well, if the Dow drops 5%, I'll sell half. Or whatever it would be. One could also say, well, if the market starts to fall, I'll transfer more into cash. Cash increases, as cash increases relative to your stock positions, it takes out some of the swing. It takes out some of the volatility. If you have 100% stocks, it's going to move more than if you only have the same stocks in 50% and the rest in cash. Cash smooths out volatility. Won't eliminate it unless you went to all cash, and then it wouldn't move at all, would it? You could also start swapping out stocks for fixed income investments, bonds, or preferred stocks, to mention a few. There are a lot of what we call fixed income. Fixed income, although there's no guarantees that they will offset a market rout, historically, and many believe, they have been regarded as an anti-stock market play, if I can use such a term. The traditional portfolio theory years ago used to be stocks and bonds. And the belief was that stocks and bonds would move opposite of each other. That was the belief then. Modern portfolio theory, MPT, in the investing world, modern portfolio theory, basically adheres to the theory of diversification, or a wide variety of assets. You could actually bet the market will go down and you'll make money. This could be buying an inverse fund, or what I might call a contrary fund. Now, don't get confused. There are funds called contrarian funds that are in no way geared opposite of the market. That's just a name they use. But an inverse fund or bear fund usually is typically indicates that you've got a fund that will move opposite of the market or is geared to. Remember, it's only geared by somebody's brain. So they could be wrong, right? Some call these bear funds, which I mentioned before, and they attempt to gear negatively to the market, meaning they go up and the market, general markets go down. So a strategy could be, I own 10% cash, and I own 30% in fixed income, and I own 60% the remaining portfolio in stocks. And if the market goes down a certain amount, I will take some of the stocks and I will buy a contrarian fund. I will buy a, better said, an inverse fund, a fund that is geared negatively to the market. So no matter what method you consider, the point is here is to have a method that will allow you to not give all of your gains back when the market sells off, and to protect a portfolio from a devastating setback if we have a complete hammering money NATO in the markets. I think I just coined a word. Instead of tornado, it's money NATO. An experienced financial advisor can discuss a variety of protections, enabling you to perhaps sleep better at night, knowing your money is at least somewhat defensive in posture if things go south. Keep in mind, investing involves risk in exchange for the possibility of gains. That's the basic definition of it. And although there are a variety of methods available to help protect you, there are no guarantees that any will work as planned. If an investor comes to me and they can't accept any risk, then we steer them toward U.S. government guaranteed savings accounts, bank CDs, and such things as short-term U.S. treasuries. Those things are not going to move. And we're allowed to say that those are guaranteed because they're guaranteed by Uncle Sam. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that I chuckle at when I read magazines and read financial articles. And we're going to talk about it in just a second. We'll be right back. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station.
Hey, I'm not complaining cause I really need to work, but hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent, I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, working, working for a living. Cause I'm working for a living. Oh,
night. Grease monkey, ex-junkie, winner of the fight. Walking on the streets, it's really all the same. Selling souls, rock and roll, any other game.
And you're tuned to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunabertie, edition 271, Money Matters, your economic forum. Thanks for joining me today. And you can check out your program on your community radio station at their website. Ours is kvmr.org and shows all the fine programming happening on the station around your community. You are the you in community. So I read a lot of financial stuff, a tremendous amount of financial stuff. And sometimes when a group of experts all fall for the same misconception, and then I hear it repeated through various other financial magazines and media outlets, I have to smirk a little bit. And the latest one I've seen going around for about a year. The latest exhibit of a deficient grasp of how all things money works, the latest exhibit finds itself at the doorsteps of the National Association of Realtors, where in their February 13th, 2018 article impend, housing inventory hit an all-time low in quarter four, 2017, the National Association of Realtors states, quote, a majority of the country saw an upswing in buyer interest at the end of last year, which ultimately ended up putting even more strain on inventory levels and prices, unquote. I don't want to pick on the National Association of Realtors. I'm just saying this. They disseminated this quote. So I want you to listen. Which ultimately ended up putting more strain on inventory level and prices. Okay, I'll give them that one. Inman.com then went further. Inman.com demonstrated they too suffered from a deficiency in economic understanding by stating in their January 9th article, 2018, entitled, Low Inventory Will Be a Huge Challenge in 2018. Low inventory will be a huge challenge in 2018, referring to housing, the low inventory of housing. And I've seen that written in many magazines, even around this county, that this county has low inventory in housing, and it will be a continuing problem. And Inman says, economists say tight supply remain a thorn for brokers, developers, and homeowners as the new year approaches. Okay? Low inventory will be a huge challenge in 2018. Now, 2018 has another 6 months to go. Okay. I don't know where all these groups are getting their economists, but apparently many of them skipped Econ 101, which starts the potential student of economics, of which I am one, by having them learn the basics of supply and demand as it relates to price. In other words, when I go to Econ 101, I discovered at 14, that's what I wanted to do. This is what I wanted to do. My dad gave me a book entitled You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation of the Dollar. And at 14, I picked it up and I couldn't put it down and I knew what I wanted to do. So the first thing they teach in economics class, guns and butter. Guns and butter. And they talk about supply and demand and price and how it affects. Pricing directly reflects supply and demand levels. Now, supply and demand, the demand levels are demand, how much people want it, but supply levels could be thought of as inventory levels. What's the supply in real estate? What's the inventory? Inventory levels are used by the NAR and the other real estate media spends, okay? As a problem. Low inventory levels are a problem. Okay. Here's the skinny, okay? In economic reality, in the realities of the economic universe from which we live, there is no such thing as an inventory problem. There is no such thing as an oversupply problem or a low inventory problem. There is not. The key there being problem. Inventory levels are a symptom of a problem, not a problem in itself. And symptoms can be cured, usually. Inventory levels are always seeking balance in a free market because high prices tends to cure high prices and low prices tends to cure low prices. And that's accomplished by the dynamics of supply. Stay with me, dear listener. Sounds confusing, but it is not. Here's an example. Suppose a bottle of juice sells for $1. And people like this juice so much, they buy a ton of it. And the juice companies can't keep up. And therefore, the supply tightens and they suffer from low inventory. Such as we are so told that we have a problem with low inventory in the county. Among other things, and the NAR is saying we have low inventory everywhere. Seeing a high demand for their juice, juice companies figure out they can raise their price and do so. If demand continues to deplete inventories, the companies can continue to raise their price and, hence, will increase their profits. With these increased profits, economic models say the more money you make on something, the more the odds are more people are going to get in on it and try to make money too. So more companies will enter the market to capitalize and take a piece of that profit, and they will make even more juice. And that will start to increase levels still more. If the low inventory continues, more companies will enter, and they will raise the price even farther. As the price increase hits the market, basic economics say the more you charge, the less you'll sell. As the price continues to go up, demand will start to drop. And that, coupled with the rising inventory levels, because more companies are making this stuff, will return the market and the inventory to a more normal range. Presto, low inventories are no more. Conversely, if the price of anything goes too high, eventually fewer people will be able to afford it, like maybe we saw in the housing bust. This will cause an inventory glut. And with an inventory glut, sales drop. Also, adding to the force of the lever to reduce inventory levels, some companies will then go broke. They can't sell enough. Price is too high. And the mechanism works in reverse. Companies will go out of business. Prices will drop. When prices drop, more people start to buy, and the symptom of high inventory levels will dissipate, just like low inventory levels did. The underlying problem is not low inventories. That is a symptom of the problem. Low inventory levels, or high ones, are just the signpost telling you that a problem has occurred. There is no such thing as low inventory or high inventory levels, or high inventory or low inventory, as a permanent problem. It's an oxymoron. It's impossible. Inventory levels are merely a symptom of a problem. And that problem is the mispricing of the asset in relation to demand. What's the cure for the problem? Well, you could say, what's the cure for the symptom? How do we cure low inventory levels? Easy. I cure it in a day. Price adjustment. Price adjustment is the solution to inventory imbalances now and always. Simplifying the message, low inventory can always be rectified by raising prices, while high inventory levels will cause prices to drop. In the case of real estate and the claim of our so-called experts, they are as misguided as those that believe a high fever is an illness. Fevers are a symptom of an illness, just as inventory levels are a symptom of a pricing problem. The problem is manifested by whoever is pricing the asset. If they're pricing it too low, inventory levels are going to be tight because people want to buy Tabasco sauce at a penny a bottle. If you set the price too high, inventory levels will skyrocket because nobody will buy anything. In the case of real estate, those, quote, tight inventories, low inventories, are telling you that home prices are too low in relation to demand. Whether you like it or not, or come to me and say, well, first-time buyers won't be able to afford a house, that's not what I'm discussing. That's an opinion. The fact of the matter is that home prices are too low in relation to the demand. That the majority of real estate experts claim low inventories are going to be an ongoing problem is tantamount to saying there's an overpopulation of deer with no solution. We have an overpopulation of deer. That's a problem. The solution in the case of the deer is not the NAR, but the NRA, whose members could easily solve the problem of overpopulating deer with a handful of culling licenses to hunt a few down. That these so-called experts can't figure out that they could easily solve the low inventory problem by properly pricing the asset to correct the imbalance is scary. That these experts can't figure out how to solve a low inventory problem is scary, especially if they were pricing my home for sale, which they won't be. Unless, of course, you're pricing homes too low on purpose. Do you think they don't know lower prices means faster and more sales? Given their knowledge on the problem of low inventory, maybe not. But don't count on it. Right now, they're selling houses like hotcakes because of the low inventory condition. And that means houses are selling faster than ever. And that means commissions are being generated faster than ever. They say ignorance is bliss. And on occasion, I will say highly profitable. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Tune to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. And so we are coming into the close of the market for this day, 12:54 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, June 7th, 2018, in the year of our Lord. And we'll see where the Dow is. Now, you may listen to the show at a different time, and so the market indices may be different at the time you're hearing the show. But for those tuning in live, Dow's down, Dow is up 107 and change. NASDAQ is down 50 and change. Russell is down 5 and blah, 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 right? Okay. So where will the markets go for now? Well, I'm going to be off in mid-June. And so we will be watching the markets. I watch the markets every day for clients, for people that listen, for the newsletter. I watch clients. I watch the markets every day, every day, every day, multiple times a day, watching. And so like a person, like a scientist studying under the volcano in Hawaii. Now, we watch for signs that things are going to happen. Obviously, the people in Hawaii, the volcanologists, knew that something was up because it starts shaking and rattling, and they see that. Now, you saw it. It's like, oh, Kilauea erupted on the news. Well, the scientists already knew it was coming. So those of us that started the market, we may not know what is coming, but we know something is coming. I mean, the volcanologists could have heard a rumbling for all they know. I know it could have been Godzilla coming up from the depth of the planet, right? They could say, well, we think it's going to erupt, but it could have been some astronomical thing. You don't know. We think we know, but nothing's guaranteed at all in life. So people like myself, I'll watch the market, and I see when things starting to go awry in little obscure areas that you may not see as a retail consumer. I'll see in little obscure areas, the bond market starting to tweak or interest rates starting to rise or something like that. And I'll think, uh-oh, something's coming up. I'll have an educated guess on what it is and position portfolios accordingly. But there are people that might disagree with what I do. And so that's why there's a lot of us. Everybody's got an opinion just like, oh, you're right. Okay, we got that. So you have been listening to show number 271, Money Matters, on your community radio station. And it was always my pleasure to bring you the show. And today's show is entitled, Into Summer We Come, 2018, because that's the year. And I'd like to remind you that discussions in this show, Money Matters, should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, and staff members or underwriters. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is grata there. It's our way of your community radio station thanking you for listening to Money Matters, access to moneymanagementradio.com, where you get newsletters. And that's all. No spam, no advertisements, nothing. It's just free. And you can listen to past shows there all you want. There's got a total of 271 shows, but I think that only there's 70 or 80 on there. Plenty of hours to drive to L.A. and back. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned to your community radio station for more excellent programming.